Yes, well, I'd known George for a while, but not really closely. And one day I'm trying to record his voice, and I think, oh yes, he's 50 metres beyond that big tree down there. And I'm walking towards him, and suddenly there I see him. Closer than I'd ever imagined, so I thought, your hearing's going, you need hearing aids. George has a very powerful voice, and George getting very close, it was just on the threshold of painful, the loudness of the voice. And then a line of sight opened up, and then he went into full display, lifted his tail up over his head and body. Suddenly transformed, he was this bright silvery white, and in the middle under the tail there is a triangle, quite spectacular. It's like a target with this red spot against the white background. George's feet are extremely powerful and very large. George's feet. But if George were to grab you and he wanted to hang on, you couldn't by yourself prise his toes loose. Tremendously powerful feet. George performs on platforms of thin vines lying crisscrossed loosely on the ground. And when he is displaying and singing, he's stepping from one foot to the other on this quite often. It's a dance. George, in a manner of speaking, is a good dancer. Well, perhaps, but George, George, sorry about that, George does three beats to the bar, and you see him positioning himself on these vines. He picks one vine up with a foot and tests it, and then when he goes into these rhythmic notes, he's tapping that vine on the one below, strongly rhythmical, in perfect time. In a manner of speaking. George is doing it in perfect time. So, I argue that he's tapping vines together, he's virtually using rhythm sticks, a musical instrument, and very likely they're the only wild birds in the world that do this. Yes, well, in a way, in a manner of speaking, George, while his dancing is fairly simple, you could say that he's a waltz king. Well, the Gronking song has got that name because they make a very loud gronk, gronk. It's a very peculiar thing. suburbs are mimicking dog barking. They're low frequency sounds, so they carry better through the rainforest than the high frequency stuff, and you can hear them at quite a distance. They're very loud. George's performances. Minutes sometimes, and you wonder why they have this spectacular display when they're in such thick vegetation. George evolved under forest conditions that were very open, and gradually with climate change or whatever, the forest changed to this very dense vegetation, and the visual signals then were only valuable when very close, so they needed this very loud song to attract females from a distance. Oh. George was an extremely shy person. There was no way that George would let you watch him. He would see you coming before you saw him, and the voice would stop and he'd just disappear. But now George has come to agree that a human presence is not a danger. It's a human, not a dingo or something approaching that he can hear. Just say, "Hello, George, how are you?" or something like that as you walk up. So. I guess the moments that stand out are when he's just standing there, tail at rest behind him, and he's singing away, and he decides to go into full display. Very quickly, in a fraction of a second, he forms a hemispherical dome of filmy feathers that completely cover his head and body. It's a very spectacular effect. Silvery and white in colour, it's difficult for anyone from the outside to look in. If you take a photograph, you can't tell that George is looking at you, but he can look out through the filamentary feathers and see you very well indeed. Photograph George, and he used a delay shutter release, not realising that this produced a flashing red light, and George was in full display, this dome of feathers completely concealing him, and when the red light came on, he didn't like that, and he raised his tail vertically, stared right at the camera. You know, that's going just a bit too far. I'm not going to put up with that. Relaxed his tail and stalked off. He didn't race off, he just stalked off. Oh, yes. George is a very strong-minded individual. Very much so. certainly they give you a tremendous shock or a fright, because they have a very piercing whistle, alarm call, and this must give them a slight advantage if they're suddenly confronted by, say, a dingo who comes around the corner and they let out this scream. It must surely give the dingo just a fraction of a pause, which might be enough for them to get away. The fact that George is now over 30 years old, spends most of the day on the ground in the rainforest, is a tribute to just how alert they are, how wary they are, that no predator's been able to get him in all those years. I've known George for, well, in a manner of speaking, I've known George for 20 years. I regard George as a friend. I suspect that George doesn't regard me as a friend. It's just another one of those humans. I guess George has changed my life. He's one fellow creature that I have grown to love, and this has never happened to me with any other animals. Life after George, I wonder what it's going to be in human terms. George is probably about as old as I am. I think at this stage it's a toss-up which of us is going to survive the longest. But eventually George must die, comes to everyone, every creature, and if that happens while I'm still active, what do I do? There's going to be a hole in my life, and there's going to be a hole in the Leck group of lyrebirds there. George gets up very early in the morning. Well, perhaps not as early as some other species. I sort of wonder sometimes whether George wouldn't sleep a bit longer if allowed, but the other birds are awake and calling, so still too dark on the floor of the rainforest for safety. They can't afford to be down on the ground yet. There's not enough light. Territorial songs are primarily aimed at other males to say, "This is my territory, you keep out." And all the mimicry is aimed at females to attract them to come into the territory. But on some occasions, an Albert's lyrebird up in his roost, instead of just giving his normal territorial call, will produce a whole series of improvised variations, quite spectacular musically. And I can only imagine that he's doing it just for the satisfaction of singing. It's not got any purpose. It's just that he's enjoying singing and his ability to improvise these variations. One particular instance I can think of, there was sounds on my recording, and this was George. And because it was George, and I was quite close to him, he whistled grey thrush notes, so I whistled grey thrush notes back at him, and he kept this going for a while. Normally they would just give a few phrases of grey thrush and that was it. And there was one occasion when I think George might have actually sort of been communicating with me, and I've wondered ever since, how was he really? Saying hello, said, well, George is certainly an entertainer where I'm concerned. George has got at least three, maybe four neighbours around. They're all shouting their heads off, trying to get a female to come to them. My wife Anne is a very patient lady, but she affects to despise lyrebirds except as potential culinary items. The sound that comes out of his beak. My father was tone deaf. My mother could sing well. She had a pleasant voice and picked up the tunes perfectly well. I, from fairly early age, could whistle and I can reproduce a bird song quite well. But singing was something that I was never able to do. Just one thing that's missing in my life. But sing, no. Delightful thought. I'd like to think that he did. Ah, yeah, well. Mimicry was not like a captive parrot or something that learns to say pretty cocky, hello cocky or something like that, because somebody repeats it over and over. What the bird has heard is park visitors walking along the track and talking, so he's not giving real words, but he's got beautiful imitation of human voice. But on a couple of occasions he says quite clearly, hey, Bill.
Hey, Bill.
Anyway, and then of course there's the remarkable but somewhat disputed story of the so-called flute-playing lyrebirds. And the story is that a farmer took a lyrebird chick from the nest and raised it in his fowl yard, and it turned out to be a male. It could not hear any adult lyrebirds, so it couldn't learn to sing by copying those. What it did hear was the farmer's son practicing his flute. So it learnt to sing the diatonic scale and a couple of tunes. Keel Row and the Mosquito Dance. Later, it was released back into the wild. They became adopted as territorial calls by that population of lyrebirds and culturally transmitted. The story just sounds too detailed, too complex to have been dreamed up by somebody. I think it was really true. Right. George, with his mimicry sequence, starts off with a sapin bowerbird. Sometimes he will precede that by voiced sounds of wings and continues with a sort of mechanical buzzing sound, and this continuous buzzing sound goes on while he superimposes on that mimicry of the crack note of a whipbird. He doesn't do the preliminary that comes before, but the at the end, and he puts this on top of the other sounds. Clearly he's using the two sides of his syrinx. Satin bowerbird, green catbird, Australian king parrot, crimson rosella, kookaburra, lewin's honey eater, eastern yellow robin, white-browed scrub wren, eastern whipbird, rifle bird. George.